Chapter 18. Robin began to relax when the plane leveled off. She couldn't say that the visit had gone well, but she'd gotten through it. She felt more free from New Jersey and her old life than she'd ever felt before. In that sense, she told herself it had been a success. She told her mother and her father that it would be some time before she would be able to afford to visit again. Ron had been very quiet, and she'd been able to kiss him goodbye and leave him before he really got it to start in on her all over again. In short, she was quite alone and excited about her state of affairs. Minneapolis would still offer complications, but she felt she had a handle on what should occur there as well. It was time for her to grow up, and that meant, for a time, she should be alone and get her bearings and learn to be by herself. She was happy to be rid of Alex. She didn't feel good about what had happened with Penelope, but, she told herself, that growing up included making mistakes, and some parts of maturing were sad. Penelope was one of those, but she wasn't going to let it bother her anymore. She thought about how happy she would be to see Lenny, and how good it would feel to make dinner in her own kitchen. She'd take a shower and eat, and then curl up with a glass of wine and a book, and let the tension that was afflicting her body ebb out of her. People presented problems. The people that she knew seemed to want so many things, and be so insistent on getting them. The last few months had convinced her that trying to give people what they wanted was impossible, if she wanted anything of her life to be left for her. Perhaps her mother blamed her for the way life turned out, and wanted to let her continue to be the parent of an aging alcoholic. Maybe her father really did delight in building her hopes up and then tearing them down with cruel jokes. And suppose Ron did want her to think she was a cruel and heartless bitch. What she had learned was that she didn't have to give in to any of them. What she had learned was that as long as she tried to live up to people's perceptions of her, she would be perpetually unhappy. Growing up meant that she had the right to create her own happiness without anyone's approval. And it might seem to others that she was late in learning that lesson, but that wasn't important either. The only thing that was important was that she kept her personal goals square in her sights. Convinced that he would never see Robin again, Ron watched the plane take off and told himself that he had severely blown the best thing that had ever happened to him. He was aware of the movement of everything around him as he walked out of the terminal and back to the car. He stared at the large full moon that illuminated the August sky and told himself that he had earned a scene somewhere in the magic story of love. Now it was his job to capture and relate what he had learned. It was true that he couldn't have her, but he could have the story of him and her. And he could transform what he felt into a work of art. Something special had happened, and now he could make something else out of it. He told himself that this is what it felt like to be an artist. Robin was no longer his lover, but now she was his muse. It was like a new beginning for them, and what made this almost better was that no one could take it away from him. He drove to Rahway and told Chris about his realizations. Chris exhaled from the joint they were smoking and shook his head. You might not want to give yourself more reasons for thinking about Robin than you already have. It won't matter if unable to write songs and poems about it, man. Otherwise, it'll all be for nothing. Everything that I know about her will be for nothing. More than empty knowledge. You're going to do what you want to do anyway, said Chris. Do you think I'm being stupid? I think you're probably going to make things harder for yourself. But who knows? That just might be your way. The band's concert was the next night, and the guys spent the afternoon and evening in a marathon practice session that had been all business. Chris was feeling ready and had made arrangements to make the weekend one of the best of his life. Directly after the gig, he was going to drive himself to the airport and be off to San Diego. He was bringing his guitar up with him, along with $20,000. The deal was over and had moved along as smoothly as an untraveled interstate. The ride was going to do everyone a world of good. Mercifully, Warren was spending the weekend in Boston, and Snake had moved out, writing him a note that said she loved him, but that it was evident he didn't want her around anymore. He couldn't fault her accuracy, but there was something about Loreen having another bad experience around him that gave him an uneasy feeling. There was almost so much good karma that could be maintained in the face of negativity. Chris went to bed early that night. Ron said that he wanted to write and disappeared into his room. It was just as well. Chris turned on the TV and lay in bed. At about 10 o'clock that night, he decided to call California. But Peter's chick said that he wasn't due back from Mexico for another 4 or 5 hours. "What's he doing? Buying a house down there?" said Chris. "I don't know what he's up to," said Lonnie, "but everybody's expecting you out here, and we'll meet you at the airport. Good luck with your concert. I'm sure you'll be a hit." Chris smiled into the phone and twirled his mustache. Idly, he wondered at what Lonnie was like in bed. She was a hard-lines brunette who loved good dope and horses. Chris imagined that she was also hot and solid in the sack, too. Peter wouldn't have put up with anything less. Ron sat in his room looking over what he'd written so far. He played through the tape-recorded monologues that he'd made. There were little pieces there, little snippets, but nothing seemed unified yet. He told himself that the thing to do was to keep on writing. What it meant that it didn't make any sense yet was that he hadn't gotten to the place where it made sense yet. Nothing more. He had to trust that it would make sense if he kept working at it. He believed that it would more than he believed in anything since he'd been a child. In some strange way, this writing, this poetry thing, was like being a child all over again each time he created a poem. Images. He wanted images. Images of Minneapolis. Images of the time when they were in tune with what was around them, when he felt something reaching out to the world, felt the world reaching back to him. Walking through the parking lot to the Botanical Garden and the zoo, arms and hands locked together, we went to the half-acre cage where they kept the wolves. One white male with dog-sad eyes and yellow-green teeth, twitching his ears at the summer flies in hopes of a piece of meat. One elephant held to a tree by a chain that clanks beneath each step. He walks round and round. The buffalo won't move an inch or make a sound or blink. The monkeys are modeled on New York City, packed in and surrounded by a moat. Some shout to the people outside, shouting among themselves, moving with the business of the tribe. Some asleep and some silent. The imported gardens, screaming with flying song, and mumbling trees that reach up to a glass-covered sky. And the garden statue, with her smooth body and surprised face, holding up her hands for water. The next day was a waiting game, but Chris knew how to wait. If the years of dope dealing had taught him anything, it was how to be patient and not rush things. He had a good breakfast at a diner with Ron, and then he came back to Rahway and took a nap. The guys in the band began to arrive at about 5 o'clock. Chris had been fooling around with his flute for about an hour and felt good about the way it felt in his hand and out of his mouth. The notes seemed particularly clear, and he was able to hear himself with unusual clarity. It was going to be a good night. By 7 o'clock, they arrived at Pistol Pete's and were getting set up. Everybody was up and excited. The sound checks and tuning took a little longer than usual because of nerves and a desire to make everything more than just okay. The stage was small, but the lighting was good. Chris looked out at the empty room and wondered if this was the beginning of something big, or just another pipe dream. What Ron called going to hunt tigers in Africa before they were extinct. They were due to begin their first set at 9 o'clock and play 40 minutes on and 20 off until the place closed at 2 a.m. The band had compiled 4 sets of music, which meant that the last two would be mixes and matches of the tunes that had gone the best. Chris would be singing the first song, and that did make him a little nervous. The song reminded him of Loreen. He wondered if she would be able to hear it. The band started like a sprinter at a marathon, pouring every bit of energy they had into the first song. Chris strained to keep his voice on key and in time with the music. He was happy when Brown Eyed Girl was over, and he could slip back into the flute background on Moondance. The band finished their first 40-minute set in under a half an hour. The guys turned around and looked at each other with an expression of, "What happens now?" The crowd had been enthusiastic, but mainly consisted of their friends, who were cheering loudly at every available occasion. At the moment of indecision, Chris stepped up to the mic and said he was going to introduce the band, and that they were going to close their first set with a blues jam. Pistol Pete winced. People didn't come to hear jams. They came to listen to songs that they knew. He wondered if he'd made a mistake by using amateurs and banking on his friends drinking enough to make his night. Chris ended the loosely organized and sometimes painfully redundant jam by saying, "I'm Chris Calvin, and we're Pantheon. Tell your friends about us." The crowd cheered as the guys laid down their instruments and jumped down from the stage. Pistol Pete looked at his bartender and grumbled. "They've got every friend they know in the world here already, and they're not drinking. Did these guys bill this as a free show?" The bartender shrugged and paced the bar, refilling an occasional beer. The second set was better. The guys were more settled down, and some of Pistol Pete's regulars had arrived. Stone's music always went over big in bars, and the guys had been right to fill their entire set with standards. Pistol Pete relaxed a little and began to smile. By the third set, Pete was chuckling. The place was packed, and the band was belting out a combination of Beatles tunes and Motown dance music. Pistol Pete loved it when people danced, because when they danced, they drank. Chris felt euphoric. He could make out some of the faces in the crowd, but it all seemed to be spread out in front of him, like a friendly ocean. Nobody heard their mistakes or seemed to react to them, and the guys in the band were beginning to display some showmanship. During the fourth set, Chris began to feel the effects of the 7 or 8 beers that he'd consumed on a fairly empty stomach. The guys had decided to simply replay the first set because they were sure that it would sound so much better that it would be different. Chris was loose at the mic for Brown Eyed Girl. His eyes roamed the crowd and found smiling female faces everywhere. Sitting at the end of the bar for the entire night, Ron was a soda-drinking mixture of envy and satisfaction. Chris deserved this, but secretly, Ron had hoped that at some point, Chris would have invited him up to sing one of his songs that they had worked on at Rahway. During the last set, he had an exotically thin, short-haired girl slip into the seat beside him. She was smoking long, slender cigarettes and drinking rum and cokes. Ron could have sworn she was familiar, but couldn't remember seeing her anywhere. Then she swung round on him with an easy, graceful motion and said, "You're Ron Tuck, aren't you?" Ron's mouth fell open. He managed to say, "Yes." "Warren Lashley told me quite a bit about you, but I didn't really expect to see you here. I'd heard that you were someplace out in the Midwest." "I was, but I came back." "Did you enjoy the Midwest?" Her eyes were fantastic. A spread of warmth from her smile was filling him, and the rest of the bar was fading out quickly. "No," said Ron. "I belong around here. Things are too simple out there. I guess I'm jaded because I really seem to enjoy complexity and congestion." "Who are you?" She smiled. "That's right. We've never met, have we?" "I know enough about you to feel like I've known you for years." "I'm April." Ron flashed his grin. "And how is it that you know so much about me, April?" "Warren says that we're doubles." "He never said it to me." "I don't think he wanted us to meet. He was always very protective of who he introduced me to." "Do you know these guys?" Ron gestured up at the stage where Wild Horses was being played for the third time that evening. "Only Chris." "What do you think?" "They're awful, aren't they?" said April, grinning back at him, pressing the tip of her pointed shoe against his leg. "They're okay," said Ron. "This is their first gig." "Do you think they'll get another?" Ron laughed. "I don't know. Anything's possible." "Would you mind driving me back to Rahway?" "Warren's in Boston." "Is he?" "He left yesterday. I'm the only one there tonight." "Would you like some company?" Ron felt his throat tighten. He was being picked up. It was the first time in his life that he could remember something like this happening. "Sure." "Can we leave after this set?" "If you'd like." "I've just got to tell someone on the other side of the room that I won't be leaving with him," said April. "It will only take me a minute." Ron watched her walk away. She moved like pure class, and he shook his head in wonder at what she found to be so interesting about him. She returned more quickly than he expected her to. "Take me out of here now, and I'll love you forever." Ron flashed his best grin and threw down a tip. He felt her reach for his hand as they made their way through the crowd and onto the street. "There isn't any food back at Rahway. Do you want to stop for something to eat?" "I don't really like to eat," said April. Ron felt jolted from someplace inside him and grinned his very best dimpled grin. "Do you know that your eyes are very bright?" said April. "No," he said, lowered his lashes for the compliment. "They're alive. I get the feeling that you see everything and understand much more than you ever let on." "That's a wonderful thing to say," said Ron. "I'm not sure that I believe you, but it makes me feel very good to hear it." When they got into the car, she moved next to him on the seat. "So tell me what Warren's told you about me," said Ron. "He says that you're stronger than most men that he's met, and you're probably going to be a great teacher someday."
"Warren said that?"
"He also says that you're horribly compulsive, and that he's convinced that you're self-destructive." "I believe that he said that." "How is it that you and Warren have spent this much time talking about me?"
"I already told you. You're my double."
"I know this is going to sound pretty stupid, but I don't know what it means." "You're a Gemini, aren't you?"
"Yeah."
"Well,
That's one thing that absolutely brings us together. Ron's head spun as they drove back to the house. This was beginning to feel eerie. Things like this just didn't happen to him. Who were you at the bar with, April? A guy? A date? Sort of, but he wasn't anybody that I cared at all about. When they got to Rahway, he led her into the kitchen and took a good look at her. She was wearing a tan silk blouse and a tight leather necklace and a white cotton slacks that looked very expensive. "Do you want some wine?" said Ron. "Yes," she said, over her shoulder, and she went into the living room. Ron brought the carafe of wine into the living room and found April looking through the record albums. She picked out one of Warren's classical pieces and put it on the turntable. Ron sat on the couch, watching the way that she moved and thinking that she was far too elegant for him. She sat down next to him, took the glass of wine. "Tell me about your friend Robin," said April. "Robin?" Ron blinked like someone who had been shocked and stared ahead blankly for an eternity of seconds. "That's her name, isn't it? That girl you lived with?" "We aren't together anymore," said Ron. He stared at her again. The mention of Robin's name had changed everything. Now her face appeared a bit insect-like, and Ron noticed that she had an overbite. "There isn't too much to tell. We were together for 4 years, and then she moved away. I tried to move out there this summer, but things were different, and I came back."
"Then the two of you are finished with each other?"
"I believe so." "That's good to know," said April. "Why?" "You're an attractive man, Ron, and I want to get to know you better. But you know how complicated things are when there are jealousies involved."
"I don't think that's much of a problem, but I'm not sure that someone like you would be interested in me."
"Why do you say that? You're very sophisticated, April. Isn't it disgusting? I've been trying my best to get away from it from the time that I first realized that it was true." She brought her face very close to his and licked her lips. She put her hands inside his shirt and slid them across his chest. "You have a very beautiful face. And smooth skin, Ron." Ron couldn't believe what happened next. He wasn't even sure what made him do it. But he pulled away for her and said, "I'm not ready for this, April. My head is spinning. And a few minutes ago, I felt that my cock was going to hemorrhage at the very sight of you." April smiled and looked down at the bulge in his pants. "That's so sweet. I can't remember when anyone ever told me that the very sight of me was going to cause them to have an orgasm. It's just my body. It doesn't understand emotion yet. I'm hoping that it matures past adolescence at some point in the future, but there's no indication of it at present." April laughed and lightly rubbed Ron's bulge. "You're priceless," she said. "I'm not going to tease you anymore, but I would love to have that thing of yours explode." Ron smiled. He hadn't allowed himself to even think about an orgasm since the first night in Robin's bed, when he rubbed herself on her behind and she had stiffened and moved away from him. "This is like a very weird dream, you know. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm just being selfish and a bit insensitive. I'm going to sleep in Warren's room tonight. Come in whenever you want." Having said that, April got up, carrying her glass of wine, went into Warren's room. She left the door open and began to undress. Ron sat there paralyzed. Then he went into the bathroom and took a shower. Naked and wet, he went to Warren's doorway and knocked on the open door. She was lying on her back. "Come here," and lie down, Ron." He obeyed, and she took some oil from the nightstand beside Warren's bed. "I just want you to relax." Ron closed his eyes and lay very still as she started to massage his feet. "Do you know what Rolfing is?" "No," he said, "but you can do it. It's a kind of erotic massage that teaches the feet or the center of the body's sensitivity." She took the knuckle of her index finger and pulled it along the bottom of his foot very firmly. "This breaks up the calcium deposits," she said. Ron's feet felt they'd been opened up with a drill. He grimaced, but fought successfully to allow himself not to pull away. His brain kept trying to whisper, "Relax." When she finished with his feet, she held his legs, and then his ass, and then his back and neck and arms and fingers. "Now, turn over so I can finish you off." Ron did as he was told. And she oiled his cock and balls and rubbed them until they were very hard and tight. "Do you like to watch women play with themselves?" she said. "I don't know," said Ron. "Now you're not allowed to touch yourself or me in any way. Just lie there and watch." She straddled him, and Ron gasped at the sight of her fully shaved pussy. "I dislike body hair on a woman, don't you?" Ron nodded and gaped as she spread herself and ran two of her fingers along the sides of her labia. "What do you like to call a woman's vagina, Ron?" "I mean, cock fits a man so well." "I prefer calling it a cunt to calling it a pussy." "Cunt is fine," said Ron, stammering and then answering very fast. She smiled down at him. "You like cunt too. Well, just watch my cunt, Ron, and I'll put on a little show for you." She rubbed herself back and forth for a long time. "I'm almost there, Ron. Now I'm just going to put your cock in me and let you finish me off. Is that okay?" Ron nodded again. She squatted over him. "Now I'm just going to sit on it very slowly because it's very big and hard and I want it to go all the way in me. Remember, you're not allowed to move." Ron closed his eyes and felt the lips of her cunt on the head of his cock. Then he felt her slide down his length with an exquisite slowness. A groan escaped from him, and his hips bucked involuntarily. She slapped his face and whispered fiercely, "Lie still, Ron, and hold it as long as you can." She continued to go up and down very slowly. Ron saw her thighs start to shake and looked at the leather collar that she'd left on when she threw her head back and moaned loudly. But she didn't move any faster. If anything, she slowed down even more. For two or three luxurious minutes, the slow motion continued. Then April said, "You've been so good, but I think you shouldn't wait any more." She raised herself off of him and knelt on the floor beside the bed. Ron's cock was more swollen and purple than he'd ever seen it before. "Now, just relax and let everything go." She took two fingers and began to go up and down very quickly and lightly. Ron felt the orgasm start in his balls. He felt his cock get more unbelievably hard than he'd ever remembered it being. At first, clear liquid began to seep out of the little hole in the top. April put her whole palm on the shaft and began to move it furiously. "Here it comes, Ron. Here it comes." It shot out in a long, hot splash that continued forever. She continued to rub, and it continued to squirt as he moaned with his eyes closed and his head pressed back into the pillows. Then it oozed, and finally it dribbled. Ron felt like he was losing consciousness when he heard her say, "I think you really needed that." He nodded and passed out. When he woke up, April was gone. There was a note on the refrigerator. "I had to leave. You're extraordinary. I'll find you again."